प्यारे हैं, तू प्यार का संगर हैं, तेरी एक बूंद का प्यास है हम, तेरी एक बूंद के प्यास है हम, लौटान जो दिया तूने, लौटान जो दिया तूने, चले जाएंगे जहां से हम, चले जाएंगे जहां से हम, तू प्यार का संगर है, तू प्यार का संगर है, तेरी एक बूंद के प्यास है हम, तेरी एक बूंद के प्यास है हम, तू प्यार का संगर है। गया मन था पागल पंछी उड़ने को बकरा, उड़ने को बकरा, पंख कोमल आंख तुली जाना है सागर पार, जाना है सागर पार, तू ही से समझा, अब तू ही से समझा, राह भूले थे कहाँ से हम, राह भूले थे कहाँ से हम, तू प्यार का संगर है, तेरी एक बूंद के प्यास है हम, तेरी एक बूंद के प्यास है हम, तू प्यार का सागर है। चुमकें गाड़े जिंदगी उधर है मौत खरी, उधर के मौत खरी, कोई क्या जाने कहाँ हिस्सी माँ उलझन आनु परी, कह दे कानों में जरा कह दे कि आए कौन दिशा से हम, कि आए कौन दिशा से हम, तू प्यार का सागर है, तेरी एक बूंद के प्यास है हम, तेरी
thank you very much. This was Sister Elena from Russia. Give her another round of applause. Such a beautiful song. Thank you very much. So, Om Shanti, welcome to all of you, and welcome to those who are online, and welcome to our dear Divine Sister Usha. Sister Usha, we wanted to get a flower. We couldn't find a flower as beautiful as you. So eventually we found this lovely sister from Russia to sing this song, "You Are the Ocean of Love." Of course, Sister Usha is the ocean of love. She's also the ocean of knowledge. But she has a special place in my heart, because when I was a young BK, which was a long time ago, she was living in Pandavabhavan. And so whenever we came to Pandavabhavan, she gave us a lot of care and a lot of training. And I got the feeling at that time that she was very close to Dadiji, because Dadiji also cared for her specially. So I was so happy to have her. We tried a long time for her to come up here, but she's a very busy soul. You know, she has lots of television programs. She goes to many of the big corporations in Bharat. She is one of those BKs who is influential both within the BK family and in the Laukik world. So she's in high demand. So thank you so much for coming, giving us this time today. And she especially, management programs, positive team programs, so many programs she have created, written a book, at least one, maybe more. And then she shifted to the research of the Gita and the Ramayana. And so she has become an expert in that. And this is why she's in such high demand all over India. And her program is carried on the media, on television programs, etc. But for us, and for me, she's our dear Divine Sister Usha, who has been in Gyan since 1980, or maybe before, since 1974. And when did you come to Madhavan to stay?
In 80.
She came in 1980 to stay. So happy to have you. Thank you so much for coming.
My
Om Shanti. Welcome. One more announcement. Those who are Jo Hindi translation chahiye, jinko Hindi translation chahiye, aap haath uthaiye. Ek, one. Okay, so they should go to the English. You put on the headphone in the English area and you will get the translation through the English headphones. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. Om Shanti. Om Shanti. A very good morning and Happy New Year according to the Indian calendar. Today is New Year according to the Indian calendar. And it is celebrated in various states across India on the basis of various names. Different names are given to this celebration in India. And today is a special day because in this New Year celebrations, they worship Brahma and not any other god. Very much connected that because Brahma Baba becomes an instrument to create a new world order, so the festival is also dedicated to him, that the new year means the new era begins with the worshipping of Brahma Baba. So this is the only festival where Brahma Baba is worshipped in the path of bhakti also. And when Brahma Baba is worshipped, we Brahmins are also remembered by all the people in the world. Coming to the subject today, which is a very beautiful subject thought over by Vijay Bhai and his team, Jasuben and all, upon the revelations of Gita across the various cultures. And Gita is special because according to the Supreme Court of India, recently it is announced that Gita is not a holy book for Hindus only. It is a book that is for the universe altogether. And all the people in the universe are free to refer to this holy book. So it is given a universal acceptance by the Supreme Court of India recently. So Gita is special because in terms of pure spiritual knowledge, the Bhagavad Gita is incomparable. And its intrinsic beauty is that the knowledge applies to all the human beings and does not postulate any sectarian ideology or secular view. It is approachable from the sanctified realms of all religions and is glorified as the epitome of spiritual teachings by the Supreme. Because if we see that it is not one Arjuna who was confused, Gita is a revelation that takes us from the state of confusion to the state of clarity. And this clarity only comes when there is spiritual wisdom. In today's world, we find people are having all the information. They are in the ocean of information. In fact, we have so much information, more than our ancestors had during their entire life. But there is a drought of wisdom. No wisdom. We can reach to the moon, but we cannot just cross the street and look into anyone's, what they are going through, what they are suffering from. This wisdom is not there. So in everyone's life, in the present time, we see that there is a time of ultimate challenge when life becomes unfair and every resource is over. Faith is shaken. Values are dried up. Patience, compassion, persistence is just pushed to the limits. And some people overcome the challenge of life and lead their lives in a worthwhile way, while others destroy themselves in this conflicts of life. So much confusion there is in human life. So Arjuna is just a symbol of a common man today. It is not something that was 5,000 years ago that is seen as a book of wisdom. But in today's age, everything is practically happening. So Arjuna is the symbol of a human being, a common man, who is so confused, so nervous, so stressed, in anxiety, that although he had all the skills and all the talents and the strength, but he laid down his competence and started saying to God, "I'm sorry, I cannot fight this battle." Well, it is not the battle in a Kurukshetra field, in a piece of land in India, but it is a battle that each one is going through in his own life. It is a battle of oneself inside. And when everyone is going through this battle, there are times when we get so frustrated that although we have all the skills and talents and everything in us, all the strength, but we start giving up in our life. And we lay down everything. We talk to ourselves, maybe a conversation with God. How long should I continue with this fight? I cannot take any more. I cannot take any pressures now. And this is how we start losing the faith in our own self. We start losing the confidence that we have in ourselves. And we land up somewhere in depression. So this word Kuru means to do, practically coming into action, something that has to be done. And Pandav and Kaurav, these are shown to be one family, Kuru family. Pandavas means those who have a loveful intellect with God, those who perform pure actions. And Kaurav means those whose intellect is not willing to connect with God. Those who perform impure, unrighteous, irreligious, sinful actions. So they are shown to be of one family, but both separate. And in this picture it is shown, this is a scene of Mahabharata, that both of them go to Krishna for help. And it was said that whoever he would see first would get the chance of getting the help. Both reaches at the same time, Duryodhana from the Kaurav side and Arjuna from the Pandav side. And it is said that Krishna was sleeping, so they did not wish to wake him up, so they had to sit. So Duryodhana sits by the head side, thinking that whenever he would open his eyes, he would see me first. It's a scene that where we have to learn something. It's a very deep meaning in it. And Arjuna stands near the feet. And naturally when a person is sleeping and he opens his eyes, he would see the one who's standing there at the feet. So as soon as he sees Arjuna, he says, "Oh Arjuna, when did you come? So Duryodhana starts fighting. "I came here first and I need to get the chance first." Bullying Arjuna. The state of the whole world today is shown in this small scene, that how there are people who are on the path of irreligiousness or unrighteousness. They always try to bully others. They try to bully those who are humble, on a righteous path, who do pure positive actions, who are connected with God. So Arjuna said, "Okay, you take the chance, no problem." And the first chance was given to Duryodhana, who was the wicked soul. So God says, "Okay, I have two options. One is my entire army, which is of about 100,000 people, and on the other side is myself alone. Wherever I am, I would not fight. I would not pick up the bow and arrow or pick up any weapons to fight. I will be just a person who would be riding the chariot. I'll be the charioteer. So what would you prefer? Would you prefer my army or would you prefer me?" And this is what the option we also get in Brahmin life. We have to choose whether we want to follow the dictates of the world or whether we want to follow the dictates of God, Srimat, or Paramat, Manmat. I have a choice and I have to select. Those who do not have faith in themselves, those who do not have faith in God, those who are on the path of unrighteousness, definitely they will try to pick up the army. They want the world with them on their side. They should speak or support me. That is their feeling. And here God says, I will just be a charioteer. I will simply drive the chariot. The same thing Baba says, if you take me by your side, I won't fight for you. I won't fight for your karmic accounts. You will have to settle that by yourself. I can give you the directions. I can give you the Srimad. And the Srimad that is given ultimately makes us victorious. So following God's Srimad ultimately makes us victorious. So this is the first choice that we have to make in our lives, whether I want the worldly support or whether I want the godly support. And godly support means ultimately reaching victory. Victory is ours. So a small scene that is shown in Mahabharata but has a very deep connection with our Brahmin life today and what Baba tells us in the Murli regularly. The two types of personality, Pandavas and the Kauravas. The Pandavas are shown 5 and Kauravas are shown 100. Percentage is always on 100. So it is like 5% in the world are those who have spiritual emotions. The rest of the world are following all in a trap which they have created by their own self. The 5 Pandavas are, the first is Yudhishthir. It is said that the one with a stable intellect, sthir means stable, amidst war, amidst the battle of life, those who are able to maintain stability, inner stability, they are termed as Yudhishthir. The second one is Bhim, who have a very strong willpower, soul power. Third is Arjuna, one who is always ready to learn and grasp, move forward on the basis of understanding. The fourth is Nakul, who lives by principles of life. And the fifth one is Sahadev, who is cooperative and has divine insight and divine intellect. So these are the 5 Pandavas. And Baba tells us to inculcate all these specialities in this life. They are the ones who are connected to God. And on the other side, the Kauravas are the ones who are irreligious, unrighteous. Dhritarashtra means one who is blind in his ego, blind in his power, blind in his physical actions. And Gandhari, his wife, who also blindfolded herself. And the rest of the names of the 100 Kauravas begin with the word du. And du literally means to give sorrow, to give, or the ones who are full of wickedness. So that is why the 100 Kauravas names are beginning with du, which tells us that the wickedness or to give sorrow, whenever Baba says, if you give sorrow to anyone, you'll have to die in sorrow. So this is the karmic. So those 100 Kauravas, which we see in the world today, everybody is trying to be wicked, try to giving sorrow to one another, and this has happened. So they are maximum and Pandavas are few. So in today's world, which is absolutely at the edge of the times of another great transformation, And it is again the same state as shown in the Kurukshetra. At such times of conflict and confusion, where human beings' intellect have become completely bankrupt and downtrodden due to false action, the entire humanity is in the need of the knowledge of Gita. And this is such a war field for which God Himself is beckoning on us. One needs to become an instrument to spread this spiritual awareness and become a warrior in order to fulfill the divine will. So this is why we become the selected children of God who beckons on us and to spread this spiritual awareness. So Gita is complete book of wisdom of spiritual awareness. And it is shown that the Gita was born in a situation of conflict. Today in this world of conflict, Baba descends on this world and gives us this knowledge. Both the armies are drawn upon. The fight of missiles is about to begin. It has already begun. The conch shells have sounded. The clamor of war is tumultuous, and the hearts of the participants are torn by conflict. It is then that the Gita teachings comes. So Gita is a scripture given at the time of conflicts, when everybody's mind is full of conflict. So the complete present situation is shown 5,000 years ago, just as it is said, Nostradamus 500 years ago saw the present situation. And he wrote everything in form of a poetry. But used a very rich language that hardly people are able to understand. When events happen, then they say, yes, Nostradamus said this before, but we were not able to understand. But the sages and rishis of Bharat had such a divine insight that 5,000 years ago they were able to see the present condition. Nostradamus 500 years ago, the sages saw 5,000 years ago the present situation and how God would descend to give this wisdom to each and everyone and spread this spiritual awareness. So Kurukshetra is not a plain of Haryana, a piece of land in Haryana, but there is a Kurukshetra within each one of us. It is within our psyche that the devilish and the divine powers are drawn upon in array against each other, and it is within the mind that this battle has to be constantly fought. It is like a frequency, I would say. It is not a battlefield. It is a frequency that we have to cultivate in ourselves. Our frequency to match with the divine frequency, with the supreme frequency. This is Gita for us. When I'm able to tune my frequency with the supreme frequency, that is yoga. That is yoga. So, in the first chapter, when we say that it is a dialogue of you and God, because whenever sometimes in our lives we are so confused and we are not able to speak our insight to anyone, to share with anyone, because we don't trust people. That is when people would just have a communication with God. Oh God, what to do now? So it is a conversation of the self with the supreme and trying to understand that frequency, because we are going through a paradigm shift, and it is a very huge shift that we are going through. We have made this world very complex and polluted. We can make this world a better place to live in, provided each person instills this faith in oneself and is clear as to where does he want to go. How will he reach the goal that he has created for himself? So this is the shift that we are going through, the paradigm shift of consciousness. It is a consciousness shift from ego consciousness to soul consciousness. And for that we are having this conversation with God, lamenting on the consequences of war. Why he was confused? Why was Arjuna confused? Because in this battle, it is shown two main characters, God himself and Arjuna, and the witness to them were innumerable, multi-million soldiers and their commanders. As soon as the names of both the armies were proclaimed, Arjuna feels deeply disheartened. The fear in him is because of the thought of losing all his near and dear ones, and even the sin of committing such a grave act of war. So when he starts lamenting on the consequences of the war, he feels disheartened. But actually it was his attachment that was coming in between. The attachment to his near and dear ones. What will happen to my children if they are killed and everybody is killed? Will I be able to sit on that throne after everybody dies? Will I be able to experience the happiness of sitting on the throne? Will I be able to experience the happiness of receiving that kingdom for which I am fighting for? So such questions were in his mind. And this is what is happening when attachment comes. That is when we also start getting confused. What can I do? What is it that I have to do? How can I do this? So here Arjuna is symbolic for the consciousness of those people who are trapped in their own desires and relationships. When there is a constant war going on between one's virtues, values and vices within one's mind, then the mind gets exhausted and is not ready to fight with the devilish powers anymore. And the intellect is not able to judge except to give up to the devilish powers. Especially when one goes through long sickness, there are family conflicts going on, tensions, failures. That is when people tries to surrender to the devilish acts. And ultimately, after all that confusion, he surrenders himself to God and says, please guide me now. I'm so confused. My mind is not working. So surrender is not a weakness which is normally understood in the world, but here surrendering to the Supreme for more guidance and understanding what the wisdom says. So the intellect is not able to judge and the mind is tired and the individual is drawn to depression because there is no power within to direct or rule the mind in the right direction. A ray of hope is only possible when supreme intellectual personality guides you, when the supreme descends and answers the questions which are distracting the mind of an individual. And the truth is that you are a soul. So the first revelation of today through the Gita across the various cultures is understanding that we are not the one which we have labeled ourselves with, but we are the souls. And this body is just the karma kshetra, a field of action where I perform my actions according to the understanding or according to the things. And in the second chapter only, the laws and commandments of the war are explained by God. And he says it depends on the capacity of each Bharatvasi to tolerate happiness, sorrow, cold, heat, praise and defamation. Now when he says that the first law is to tolerate. How can a person fight if he has to tolerate? Either he has to tolerate or either he has to fight. But this is such a war where he has to be victorious on his own emotions, which is going through the various ups and downs of life. That is where we sometimes need to tolerate and overcome on the basis, or become victorious on the basis of tolerance. And this is what Baba also tells us. And beautifully he has said that the vices and the awareness and the attitude makes one victorious in such a way as water would take its form when placed in a mold. Water does not have its own shape. Water does not have its own shape. Whichever mold we put in, if we put it in a glass, it takes the form of a glass. If we put it in a pot, it takes the form of a pot. If we put it in a clay pot, it will take the form of a clay pot. Whichever the mold is, whether it is straight or vast, similarly, our consciousness does not have its own shape. Beautifully explained. Our consciousness does not have its own shape. The attitude and the awareness, whichever mold we put it, if we put it in a positive mold, it will take the shape of positive. If we put it in a negative mold, the attitudes, the awareness, the consciousness starts becoming negative, reactive. Each and every moment we start reacting. But if it is a positive mold, you become more proactive. Your attitudes are positive. Your awareness is positive. So the consciousness does not have its own shape. It all depends on what type of mold we put it in. And this is what Baba does. He puts us all in the mold of spiritual wisdom, positive wisdom. And when we are in that mold, everything starts changing. We start looking at ourselves in a different way, from body to soul. So this shift takes place. So, and then he explains, this is the conflict between the field and the field man. The karma kshetra, the field, and the field man, the soul, in which the devilish traits have to be completely demolished and allow the consciousness to be stabilized in God. A stable person, a stable soul, cannot be possessed by his senses and vices as he see himself to be equal in happiness and sorrow. When there is inner stability, we cannot be possessed by the senses and the vices, and we become worthy to attain the element of nectar. We become worthy to attain the element of nectar, the wisdom. So the soul never dies. It is eternal entity, ever existing. The soul cannot be killed. The body is killed. The five elements of nature cannot harm the soul in any way. Beautifully then said, the glow of the soul increases with the values, virtues, and dims with the vices. It all depends on the aura. Each and every person who has an aura, the more we are soul conscious with values, the seven values of the soul, then the glow starts increasing. But when a person becomes vicious, the negative mold that he has taken for himself, then the aura starts diminishing. Otherwise, the soul is powerful when not entangled with the worldly bondages and weakens when entangled with the worldly bondages. Beautifully, this is how the aura is explained. The science of aura is explained in Gita. And then he talks about the Swadharma. That according to the original religion of thyself, Swadharma, you are not worthy to fear. So when I am the embodiment of the seven qualities, the seven values of the soul, Swadharma, then we are not worthy to fear, as there is no other more beneficial path to fight being the embodiment of thy religion, the eternal transcendental nature. Religion here is not something explained at the physical level, but at the transcendental stage. But if you do not fight this battle, then you will commit sin by losing your original religion and the faith. So you lose the transcendental nature when we become body conscious. And that is when we lose the battle of life. But if we are stabilized in the soul consciousness, that means the transcendental nature of the original soul, then we will win every battle. We win every battle in life. Nobody can ever lose any battle. This is how we can always be victorious. The second revelation, the first revelation is on Swadharma. The second revelation is on karma. When we do the karma on the basis of the transcendental nature of the self, of the soul, then each karma will be a righteous action, which will liberate us from the bondages. The seed will be so powerful, nobody can destroy that seed. And we'll be able to overcome any fear in life. But each and every action has to be performed with a faithful intellect. No doubts. No doubts of what will happen or what will people say or what will others comment me or this or that. Because when stabilized in that original Swadharma and the actions performed, it will be powerful actions, righteous action. Where we perform the action, we don't have to think or worry about the fruit, and with renunciation of all fascinations and influence of company, being indifferent to success and failure, stabilizing in yoga and performing altruistic action, this feeling of equality is said to be yoga. So the third revelation is yoga, which is applicable throughout all cultures. So in the paradigm shift to soul consciousness, that is applicable. Dharma is applicable throughout all cultures. The karma is applicable throughout all karmas, and the yoga is applicable. So these are the main three revelations in Gita which makes us become manmanabha easily, where we connect our frequency to the supreme frequency. And that is when we are able to function. Otherwise, when we are not able to connect ourselves with the supreme divine frequency, it is just like a train running on the road, not on its track. And when it runs on the road, friction is created, and ultimately there is going to be a breakdown. This is what happens in relationships. This is what happens everywhere. So these are the three main revelations that I had thought upon, which to talk to you all. Thank you very much.
At this pause, I wanted to invite Sister Jasu. So she gathered some questions from the audience and others. And we specially chose and requested Sister Jasu because she also represents a repository of knowledge. She lives at our headquarters in London. And from there, all the Muralis are translated into English and sent out throughout the world. So everyone who have received a copy of the English Murali, it came because of the instrumentation of Sister Jasu. So thank you, Sister Jasu. Om Shanti.
Om Shanti. It was lovely listening to Usha Ben on a wonderful topic. The Gita itself gives us so many secrets to be able to lead a happy life, a life without conflict. This is what Arjuna was wanting to do. But faced with the dilemma of having to battle with his family. If we really think about it, the whole world is one family. And yet we're not able to live in this family without conflict. So how do we overcome conflict? One of the things that the Gita talks about is your mind is your best ally, your friend, and your mind is also your enemy, creating obstacles for you. So how do you actually, Ushapan, I know you've studied the Gita quite a lot. You've been giving lectures on the Gita for many years. And so how would you actually take the Gita and see how you can maintain that balance, maintaining that friendship within the self with the obstacles and the battles that are coming to us?
Beautiful question. And definitely in Gita it is mentioned, you are your best friend and you are your worst enemy. And it is when the mind thinks positive, we are in the positive mood, when our consciousness becomes spiritual, on the basis of values, that it becomes our best friend. But when it is placed in a negative mold, where there is a lot of viciousness, vices, initially maybe sometimes people may think that they are winning, but ultimately they lose in the battle of life. And ultimately they become their worst enemy. Why? Because they are not able to face themselves. That is how they become the worst enemy. Their actions, when they are revealed in front of the world, when their complete nature, their attitude, everything is revealed in front of the world, it becomes very hard for those people to face themselves. They cannot look into the mirror in their own eyes. That is how they become the worst enemies. So that's why being in this mold of spirituality and performing actions on the basis of our true nature, the soul nature, that is how we become our best friends.
Krishna actually told Arjuna, you have to let go of your attachments to the family. Having to deal with all the family, he has so much love for the family, and yet he is being told that he has to kill the family. So on the one hand, there's so much attachment. On the other hand, we have to practice detachment. Living in today's world, everyone has so much connectedness, but the connectedness is only through this. When you're traveling, everyone will be sitting with this. Six people traveling together, and this is their connection. So being in this world, on the one hand you feel you're very connected, on the other hand there's a feeling of loneliness. So how do you balance between attachment and detachment, detachment and loneliness, and not being kind of separated from the society, being united with everyone?
Definitely, rightly said that we are connected with the gadgets, the modern gadgets that we all use. And far and wide, people are connected with one another. But when we say detachment, means getting connected to your own self. We are not connected with our own self. We are connected with this digital things, but we are hardly connected with our inner being, our true nature, the transcendental nature. We hardly communicate with our own self. That is why the loneliness is there. Because although being connected with the world outside, nobody is there to support you when you really need them in physical. They may be telling us, okay, we are there with you, we are there with you. But present, being with us, nobody is there. And we are not even connected with our own self. So that is why the loneliness is there, which leads to depression. But detachment means avoiding, or I would say rather, that in Indian culture we have this fasting system. Fast once in a week or twice in a week. It is good if we can fast with this digital gadgets once in a week or twice in a week, maybe. Stay away from it and connect with the self, our true self, our original self. That is how we are able to bring that sovereignty in our life. And when we are able to bring that sovereignty, being connected with the soul and using the physical organs in a detached way, that is what detachment means. Detachment does not mean cutting away from anybody, being in the world like a lotus flower, being with them, but let not their influence be on my mind. But I am so deeply connected with myself and the Supreme that my influence is on them. And I know how to have self-sovereignty in my life. So then there is no loneliness, no depression. Because I am connected somewhere. I'm connected with myself, I'm connected with Baba. So this does not make me feel lonely, but at the same time, I do not allow that influence to register on my mind and let my actions and my life be guided by those influences. But when the Supreme influence is there, then I allow that influence to spread in the world. So, detachment at the same time, being in the world with everyone. And then there is no loneliness.
Shivani, you mentioned about detachment and going inside, connecting with the self. But where we started with the battle that is going on in the mind of Arjuna. And we see that this is the state of every human soul, that there's a constant battle in the self. So how do you take that first step of going beyond the battling stage, and then you're able to come to this stage, like you described the five Pandavas also. So to come to the stage of stability in this form of battle. So overcoming the battle and coming to that stability. Mm. And so then that connection can take place. So until that connection takes place, what do I need to do inside, within my mind?
What happens? The battle is only when we are in the negative mold. But when we shift ourselves into the spiritual mold, then we start understanding the truth. The battle is because there is falsehood. The battle is with the falsehood, not with the truth. There is no battle with truth. Where truth is, everything is as it is. So there is no battle, no confusion. We can see everything as it is. But the battle is only when there is falsehood. When I'm not able to see things as they are, then I have to battle, then I come into that stage of confusion. But when I'm able to see everything as it is, in the daylight as I see everything as it is, then there is no battle. There is stability inside. And then, being in that spiritual mold, then I understand how to direct my life. So the battle stops and the direction starts.
Sometimes it's actually being able to empower the intellect so that the intellect is then able to discern and able to see everything and discern the reality from the falsehood. So again, to empower the intellect to such a state, that also again requires a lot of yoga, a lot of connection. Mm-hmm. Only then can you say that you're able to actually differentiate between the two.
Firstly, I have to empower my mind and intellect with the wisdom. And this is what Baba comes and does. He empowers us through the wisdom. Knowledge helps to empower myself. So then there is gradually the stableness that starts coming. We start becoming mature. And when the spiritual maturity is there, no battle is there. Understanding deepens, understanding rises. So we are able to understand the feelings, the sentiments and everything of other people. So then there is no battle. Misunderstandings create all the battles. So misunderstanding is when I'm not able to see others' feelings, others' thing, others' heart. That is when I can say anything. Any words start coming out from my mouth. No royalty in language, no royalty in my actions, no royalty in my drishti and vritti and everything. So this shows that first I need to empower myself with the wisdom. And somebody has very rightly said, we have lost wisdom in knowledge and we have lost knowledge in information. And today, one step ahead, artificial intelligence, which is completely artificial, no reality. So when we move to that stage, definitely we are moving away from our own self to so far away that always there is going to be battle. So coming back to that self, and especially coming back to that original wisdom, is going to help me to empower myself. Then only I'll be able to connect myself with God. Until then, I cannot connect myself to God as well. I cannot have yoga with Baba also.
Shivan, you mentioned artificial intelligence, and everywhere in the world we feel that it's taking over completely. To the very fact that even creation of human beings. So what does the Gita actually have to say about that?
Yeah, when robots are there, they do everything, they speak everything, they help in every way. But as it is said, it has no soul. It has no feelings. It has no, no heart. No mind, no heart. So, how does it going to help us? It won't help us in any way. Ultimately, it is going to be a medium for destruction only. No heart, no brain, no head. No head and no heart. So how can that help us in any way? It cannot help us.
Sure. Earlier you mentioned about surrender.
That is why Gita says, connect to yourself.
Connecting with the real living power.
That's true.
You mentioned surrendering. And yes, it's a beautiful word, but then to be able to surrender. And I feel that today everyone has surrendered to the negative energy. And here we're asking people to, or the self, to surrender to the divine. Arjuna was asked to surrender. He was afraid to surrender because he thought that it would be a weakness to surrender. And realizing that surrendering will actually bring you victory. Mm-hmm. If you could explain a bit more about that, the real surrender, please. Mm-hmm.
We do not have to surrender our values. We do not have to surrender our strengths and give up to negativities or weaknesses. No. When we say surrendering, here surrender has a very high meaning where I allow my consciousness to be guided by the Supreme Srimat. That is surrender. So that I can ultimately arise, ascend, and empower myself with the Supreme Powers. So here it is, in the world people say surrender means surrendering to the weaknesses, surrendering to the person who is full of viciousness. But here in the godly world, surrender has something else. Ascend, rise, and surrender to the divine, to Baba, and allowing His strength and His power to take over and guide me towards what we say, awakening or elevation, guiding me there. Just as if I sit out in the sun, I won't say to the sun, "Oh sun, give me your heat, give me your warmth." But sitting out there, allowing those rays to just penetrate, means I can feel my body getting warmth. I don't have to say anything. I just get connected. Going out into the mountains or by the Nakki Lake, you won't say to the Nakki Lake, "Oh, give me your cool breeze." You stand out there, just breathe, and you allow that coolness to fill your each and every organs. Similarly, surrender does not mean I say to Baba, "Okay, I surrender to you now." No. We just connect ourselves, get connected with Him, and allow that power, allow those rays to just penetrate in my soul, allow it to empower me. And this is how we can win each and every battle of life. It does not mean that we have to surrender means then I don't have to use my mind and intellect, I'm surrendered. No. When I surrender myself to the Divine, I allow His Srimat to empower me, and I move on the basis I'm the person who has this choice to move my life on the basis of whatever dictates I want. So when I choose Srimat and I move on the basis of it, I can feel the freedom, I can feel the victory in every step. But surrendering to weak thoughts or the dictates of others will only make me fall and ultimately make me lose in everything in my life. And this is what has happened in the world. So allowing that Supreme Srimat to take over and empower me. I don't have to say for it, "Oh, I'm surrendering to you." No. I just get connected, and connection means allowing those rays, those powers, those to empower me. That is why Baba says that let every treasure empower you. You should be empowered with Baba's every treasure. And when you get empowered with those treasures and we start using them, we become victorious on everything. That leads ultimately to self-sovereignty.
It's great that you've mentioned Srimat, because Baba gives us Srimat for every type of action that we have to perform. The Gita also is asking us to continue to perform actions, continue to perform your karma, but not expecting any result out of that. So could you please explore that a bit more?
Karma based on the seven qualities of the soul. When the karma is based on seven qualities, they are righteous karma, elevated karma, which will never tie us in any bondage. If I do anything on the basis of purity, any action based on purity, which is the original transcendental nature of the soul. So when I do with pure intentions, pure thoughts, pure feelings, how can it bring me into a bondage, a state of bondage? I'll be free from the bondage also. That's why Baba many a times tells us in the Murli, if you have any karmic account with anyone, any other soul, the best way to become free is give good wishes, good feelings, blessings. When I do that, it makes me settle my karmic accounts very easily. But if seeing those karmic accounts, I am going to generate negative thoughts. Oh, I have to go through all this. Why should I? What karmic accounts I have? I am increasing my karmic accounts. So the best method that is explained by Baba and Gita is that whenever you see you have a karmic account, the best way to settle them very easily is start generating good wishes, good feelings for that soul. Give blessings to that soul, and then you empower those souls with those powerful thoughts, and your karmic accounts will be very fast settled.
Thank you. Often we come across so many situations in life and we feel it's such a big test paper that's come to me. And if you look at that situation a week later, it's lost its momentum. It doesn't really mean a thing. A year later, you would completely have forgotten it. What you're giving importance to today will not mean anything in a year's time. And so to be able to check the self, am I holding on to all of these things all the time? To free yourself from all of that pressure, because we're kind of constantly holding on to the pressure, thinking this is so important and something that's happened to you, it's a crisis. But here we're told to just let go of it. If you let go of it instantly, then you're able to become free and light. One last question from me to you before I open to the audience. What have you personally taken from the Gita and put into your life practically, because you've studied it in such depth? So what has helped you so much?
Practically from Gita, after reading Gita, I did not read one Gita. I read about 20 different types of Gitas written by different authors. And nowhere it is in comparison to Baba's knowledge. Whatever they have explained at a very gross level. Very gross level. Not understood at all. The depth of those words also. They have taken those words at a very gross level. It was just because of Baba's knowledge that I was able to see Gita with the insight of Baba's knowledge that made me understand the depth of Gita. And then I realized some of what Baba was trying to tell me, because they had explained it at a gross level, so sometimes it was easy for me to connect it at a gross level also, that how we are functioning in this world. And sometimes whatever Baba's words were very high, we felt as if it is impossible for me to attain that stage. Maybe we won't be able to. But understanding Gita helped me to understand Baba's depth more clearly, and I was able to put those things in my practical actions as well. So it had helped me a great deal. That one thing which Jasubhen mentioned was like we are holding on to the past, and then after 1 year we see that it not have any value of holding on to it. And so letting go became easy for me. Forgive and forget became very easy for me. These two things made my life so simple, more easy, no matter what. Forgive, forget, forget. Understanding the law of karma became very easy for me. Law of karma, okay, whatever is in your fate, nobody can take it from you. It is going to be there. The only thing is, I have to make efforts. So understanding the law of karma, instead of worrying about what people are saying and what they are doing, actually I understood nobody has time to worry for anybody in this world. Nobody has time. Who has time? Most of the time we keep on thinking, what will this one say, what will this one think about, what will... Do they have time? Nobody has time. Why should I worry about it? Let go. Finish it. Instead of pondering on to all those waste. So giving up waste thoughts became easy for me. Forgive, forget, let go. All these things became very easy after understanding Gita at the gross level and applying those subtle things at the gross level.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sometimes it's difficult to let go because we're just wanting so much control in ourselves, in our lives. But this is where the surrender really helps, letting go of all controls and just surrendering to the ultimate. So if anyone has any questions based on what Ushaben has actually told us about the Gita or anything else that you might want clarified.
Yeah, one brother.
Om Shanti Ushaben. I've got three questions. First one, based on whatever you have said, why are there five Pandavas, not six, not ten? And do they signify something specific to Baba's knowledge? First question. Second, why is Gita spoken to Arjuna specifically and not Yudhishthira, or Nagula, or Satrukhana? Is there something specific there? And number three, what is the significance of Draupadi having five husbands? But officially I think he's married to Arjuna. Am I right? Thank you.
The first question you said was why there are five, not six or ten. Five means like this handful. There's five fingers. So handful of the souls understand God, understand who God is. So it's like handful. And in the hand there are five fingers. So it is said to be five Pandavas. Not six, not ten, no. Handful. And handful is always five. Okay? The second question is, was this knowledge, why is it given to Arjuna and not Yudhishthira and not any other one? Because Arjuna, the literal meaning of Arjuna is the one who knows to grasp, to inculcate. So it is the soul who wants to inculcate, and the soul with the other four qualities. So it is not like Draupadi having five husbands, but in the scriptures also it is mentioned that when Draupadi was asked by God, what type of husband you want to have? So she mentioned these five qualities and she said, I want a husband who has these five qualities in them. Now, to depict in the scriptures one person with all these five qualities was difficult for them, because every quality has its own meaning, it has its own value, it has its own performance. So how can they depict that in one human being? Sometimes it will be like a split of personality, so it will be more confusing. So that is why these five qualities is shown to be like five personalities. But actually she married to only one. One person with all these five qualities, the one who is able to grasp, is able to have developed a strong willpower on the basis of knowledge and maintain that inner stability, and is able to lead the life on the basis of principles, because to lead a life on principles, a person has to have lot of inner strength, willpower. And then he is able to cooperate with others. So these are not five personalities, but only one person with these five qualities in him. And that is mentioned in one of the stories of the scriptures also. that it is not five but one person. But because some people may not have a confusion in them, they are shown to be five persons. Any other questions? Have I missed out anything? No. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Shaban. Thank you, Jasuben. I'm Krishna from London. Probably this is a silly question and it's not going to help us in our efforts, but purely out of curiosity. So, and forgive me if I'm wrong, Jagdish Pai was of the opinion that there was a original version of Gita which had more chapters in it. And probably somewhere along the way, the Gita was adulterated or mixed.
Yes, definitely.
So is that true?
Yeah, it is true. Actually, it was not with many chapters. It was with less chapters, less shlokas. Not chapters, less shlokas. Original Gita is said to be of like about only 8 shlokas. Original. But then it was adulterated, many things went. It is said that when Vedavyasa, he wrote the Gita, he wrote it in about 400 shlokas. Some say 8 shlokas, some say 400 shlokas. But then he gave it to his 4 disciples. That is what is mentioned in Mahabharata, that he gave it to his 4 disciples and he said, you read this Mahabharata and whatever you feel like, if you want to do some corrections, you can do it. So he gave that permission, and those 4 disciples read that Mahabharata, which was originally of 10,000 shlokas only. But when each one added another 20,000, that today that Mahabharata epic, it has become a big epic with about 1 lakh shlokas. So you can just imagine 400 shlokas to 1 lakh shlokas is how much? Just like a pinch of salt, as Baba says, that the Gita has only a pinch of salt in it.
Om Shanti. My name is Elder. I'm from Mozambique. 2 questions I have. But before that, thank you very much for the beautiful lecture. I personally haven't had the opportunity to read the Bhagavad Gita. But first question is that many times it's said that the Bhagavad Gita is the mother of all scriptures. I would like to understand that better. I was born with a Christian background. I've read the Bible, both the Old and New Testament, and I battle to understand why it is said that Bhagavad Gita is the mother of all scriptures.
Yes.
And the second question is, while answering one of the brothers, the number 5 came 2 times. 5 handful for the qualities and 5 Pandavas. I would like to understand if is there a special meaning for the number 5 in the Bhagavad Gita. Thank you.
No special meaning, but as I said, it is just a symbol for handful of souls who are connected to God. The first question that you arise was the mother of all scriptures. Because Gita is ancient, that is, because it was written in the end of Silver Age and beginning of Copper Age. That was the time when it was written in the path of bhakti. And whatever was remembered through divine visions and the insights that he got, accordingly he had written the Bhagavad Gita. And then different religion establishers, as Baba mentioned, they had all come to India in Copper Age before they established their religion. Like for Christ, it is said that Jesus, from the age of 13 to the age of 33, this 20 years, nobody knows where he went. 20 years he was on a pilgrimage in India. I came across a book which mentioned in one of the libraries I saw, Jesus lived in India. So I was curious about it and I took up that book and I read it. And it showed the whole map where he had traveled in India at the age of 13 2:33, and that was the time when Christ's soul enters in him. And during that 20 years when he visited different places in India, it is said that he met great rishis of those times. And whenever he sat down to talk with anyone, everyone mentioned about Bhagavad Gita. And during that time, because Bhagavad Gita was not the name that was given to Gita, the name was Krishna Niti. Krishna Niti means the wisdom of Krishna. The wisdom of Krishna. So, it is said that Jesus was so impressed by this knowledge of Krishna, the wisdom of Krishna, that he felt, I have to share this knowledge with my people. So at the age of 33, when he goes back, and he tells his people, look, I will teach you Krishna Niti. And it is said, when they were not able to pronounce it, they said, Christianity. Understood? This is where, that's why Baba also mentioned, Krishna and Christian, there is a very deep connection. And till now we never knew the deep connection. It was only after this, that is why in Bible, mostly everything is in Gita. Everything is from Gita only. Whatever has been mentioned in the New Testament, whether it is the Old Testament, everything talks about Bhagavad Gita. The wisdom of Bhagavad Gita only. So during that time, as I said, it was not Bhagavad Gita. The name was not Bhagavad Gita. It was Krishna Niti. And this is how Christianity came up. And that is why he was put on, he was crucified. Why? Because people thought, the people of those times, they thought that he is trying to convert us. That is the great conversion that is going to take place. And he is going to convert us into this Krishna Niti. That is why he was crucified. That was mentioned in it. And it was mentioned in one of the books that I was reading in India. And that is why after coming down from the cross, when he was taken away from the cross, the next day when his mother goes and he sees the other two were dead already, but Jesus was alive, so she called everyone and took him down from the cross. And then he was taken into the cave where his wounds were healed. And after getting healed, it is said that he told everyone, don't follow me and I'm going back. And he came back to India. And after coming back, there are various opinions definitely, but after coming back to India, then he started meditating and he started, like, he got engrossed so much into that spiritual knowledge, and his tomb was found in Srinagar. When he died, on the tomb, everything is written. You can go into the internet and search about it, and it is mentioned, and the tomb is also shown, which has everything mentioned, whose tomb it is, that the person who had holes in his hands and everything. So that was his, and he lived till the age of 93. Baba's age. He lived till that age and till 93. And after that, he died. So Gita is the scriptures of all religions also. Similarly, Islam. Islam also, it is said that when Abraham came to India, Abraham, the word comes from Brahma. Abraham. He came to India and here he got that insight and he goes back and then that is why in Quran, the holy book of Quran gives us the insight what is in Gita only. In fact, some years back, I was in a town where they had organized a program in a big ground. And just opposite the ground, there was a mosque. And the people in the mosque, they were listening to the, because this were on speakers, big speakers. So when I was talking about the Gita, they were listening to the knowledge of Gita. And the next day they come up to me and say, can we come and sit in this gathering? So I said, no problem. After that, they came in, the Muslims, they came and And then I said, why would you like to sit here? They said, whatever you are saying, everything is mentioned in our holy text, Quran, but we didn't understand. Here we understood everything, the meaning of whatever is written. So mother of all scriptures, Mahatma Buddha. Mahatma Buddha does not teach of any blind faith or worshipping or anything. But he talks of karma. And the karma is taken from Bhagavad Gita. Because the depths of karma philosophy is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita only. And he got that insight from Bhagavad Gita only. That is why in his holy text of Dharampad, he has mentioned about karma, do righteous action. So if we see all the religions, Jain religion talks about the principles which are mentioned, like be celibate, be pure, don't do anger, don't have greed. All these principles are taken from Gita. So it is the mother of all the religions. That is why I said the Supreme Court has declared Bhagavad Gita as a universal holy book, not only for Hindus. Right? Okay.
Thank you. So absolutely delightful. Such a wonderful secrets. I think only Usha Didi could have gotten these secrets from her long years of research. And we are so happy that you can reveal it, and thank you, brother, for that question, so that it can open, you know, all of these secret boxes that she has given. So I'd like to especially thank Jasu Bain for being here, for coming, for giving her time, and of course to our Usha Bain for giving us this delightful lecture and spending time with us today. Om Shanti. We have a few minutes meditation and then wait for some important announcement from Sister Celia.